back when I was trying to teach myself to play guitar, this is in the late 1920s, I didn't know what I was doing. I really wish that the Musician app had existed. The Musician app is your personal music tutor. It's the best way to learn, practice, and master an instrument. It actually listens to you play and gives feedback on your accuracy and timing. It's pretty cool. Become the musician you always wanted to be. Download Musician for free in your app store today. I'm going to do it because I'm alone and I could also get better.
Hi, my name's Bill Burr, and I feel great about being Conan's best friend because I know if he's an Irish guy, he probably can't handle a compliment.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. This is the podcast where basically I'm talking to some of my favorite people I've had on the show over the years. I love them, but no friendship ever really developed. I'm trying to see if we can make that happen here. I'm aided by my trusty assistant, Sona Movsesyan. Hey, Sona.
Hi.
And Mr. Matt Gourley.
Hi.
Yeah. What was that? That was a weird, quick.
Because
that was almost a Japanese. Hey, hey! Yeah.
I thought you were going to speak, so I cut it off mid-word.
Okay. Well, that's, I guess, your job here is to interrupt the host. That was a mistake. I am really excited about today's guest. He is one of my favorite comedians. We have a lot in common. And I think he's one of the most original comedy voices of the last decade. I'm talking about Bill Burr. Bill, I'm thrilled you're here because I absolutely love you. You're one of the funniest people out there. And we've gotten to know each other a little bit, but this is a nice chance, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe we'll hang out here today doing this podcast, and at the end you'll say, you know what? I want Conan in my life. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way. Maybe I don't feel great about Conan after talking
to him. That could go that way. Look, I'll be honest with you. It could go that way. It could happen that way.
No, man, I got to tell you, doing like the level of respect I now have doing a panel on talk shows is because of all those, the great back and forth that I've had with you and Andy. And what I've always, you know, said is you're like an old school guy where if the guest is killing, you know, the show is killing. I always know you know where I'm going, but you always pretend like you don't, and
yeah.
You just lead me down there. And then Andy always jumps in like the good cop to nice it up if I said something too far. It really works.
No, it's nice that I like comedians to score as much as they can score because I always think that's good for the show. And I've had some of them tell me over the years that they were with other hosts, and they were like, yeah, I could tell he didn't want me to score that much. And I thought, why? You're out there for an hour every night.
Is when they talk about how hard you're laughing.
Yeah.
Because I know when I watch the Carson clips, that's what I'm watching because that was like, you know, the holy grail. And if you could get that guy going, like, and everybody would, I remember back in the day just watching Johnny Carson or even like Letterman or something. I remember Chris Farley had a panel. Like, that was, like, a big thing as a comic coming up, like, to be good at panel. I feel like it's becoming, like, a lost art. And so I always wanted to be good at it. And George Goble, I used to watch all of those guys. But I saw Chris Farley on David Letterman. It was the hardest. He was already making him laugh. And he said, so what happened when you went to college? And Chris did one of those weird voices. He goes, well, Dave, the trouble continued. Something like that. And just the way he did it and the timing.
Yep.
Like, I want to say Dave put his head down on the desk. But it was a gut laugh.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was just, and I remember thinking, just as I think I had just started doing stand-up, I was like tracking, you know, already tracking laughs. Yep. And I was like, he got a gut laugh from David Letterman. I mean, that's like.
This is what I compare it to. I always had a keen eye for what made my dad laugh. Mm. And if someone really made my dad laugh or someone on TV really made my dad laugh, I noticed it. And I would feel that way when I would watch Johnny Carson as a kid. I would watch him because I'm watching a guy, an adult, who I really respect, and they're laughing hard. And as a kid, you're like, okay, that's really cool.
Yeah, I want to be able to do that.
I want to be able to do that. And I remember it was Buddy Hackett. I think Buddy Hackett used to make Johnny laugh harder than anybody.
Oh, and they'd be coming back from the commercials because he told all the dirty jokes during the commercials.
Yes.
You know, the classic two guys walk into a bar. For my dad, it was Foster Brooks.
Back when alcoholism was funny.
Alcoholism was hilarious.
Yeah, there was this guy whose whole career was pretending to be drunk, and everybody loved it. I mean, everybody loved it. And then one day, everybody said, alcoholism isn't funny, and it was over for Foster Brooks, I think.
Is he advocating beating your children and not remembering it the next day? You know what's funny is that guy never drank.
No, he was a total teetotaler.
And what I loved was after he would do it, he always made, like a lot of his appearances, he made sure he did this big dramatic bow, like that was just a performance, so like you knew. And it was like very like...
It's like Don Rickles at the end of his act would always sing, I'm a nice guy, to show people, you know, I kid. And after just going after everyone for a solid hour, he would sing a song. And I talked to Bob Newhart once, and he used to say like, lose the song. Everyone, they just love that you do that. You don't need the song.
Yeah, we know.
And Rickles was like, no, I need to do that. I need to let people know.
It was probably for him then. Do you remember that Buddy Hackett? Buddy Hackett did a special one time. Me and DeRosa were watching. It was hilarious. It was just all street jokes, just the dirtiest stuff, you know, absolutely hilarious. And then in the end, he was singing a song because his daughter had grown up and fallen in love and was getting married, and he was sad about it. And he just sang this sad song.
I never heard of this.
He just sang this sad song and closed his special on it.
Like, it's unbelievable.
It was later in his career. It was like one of those days when you first got a cable. It was HBO, Showtime, and Cinemax. It was like somewhere. It might have been a Cinemax special. I don't even remember. But he closed out a special singing a sad song. And everybody's just like, wow, that's really sad. What else you got? And it's just like, good night, everybody.
No, this is the thing that makes me crazy about comedians in general and comedy in general. There's this idea that's been around for a long, long time. I remember, I think Billy Crystal did some movie and his manager or someone said to him, now you've finally arrived. And Billy said, why? And he said, because you made me laugh, but you also made me cry. And I think, what? I have no interest in ever making anyone cry. It is not something that interests me. And all my favorite comics, like W.C. Fields, I love W.C. Fields, or the Marx Brothers, or the Three Stooges, they don't care about making you cry. I never bought into that idea that you got to make them laugh, but then at the end, you got to bring a little tear to the eye. No, you don't. Go slice an onion, you know, but like, I mean, you don't need to do that.
That's one way to do it, but I look at it like people are coming to the show to get away from that. And that's why a lot of times, you know, comics get in trouble for jokes about sensitive stuff. And it's like, that, like a lot of people, they don't understand that is part of humor, where it's like, no, you make the joke because you don't want to feel the pain. It's not that you're not taking it seriously, but like, you know, I've done shows for troops and, you know, they tell me some of the jokes when they're on the battlefield and they see dead bodies and stuff or whatever, like jokes that they make, you know, cops, you know, seeing all the carnage that they see, car accidents and firemen and all that. They all have the jokes they have to make. Other than that, we're just going to sit there in the sadness of it. So the problem is people take it as like, you know, disrespect. And now with all this childish behavior on the internet right now, which is why I'm just regressing back to MeTV.
Just to avoid the internet, you watch old TV shows on MeTV.
Yeah, I like it because I you know, what the stuff that I'm getting to do now because of the tickets that I'm selling, the thing we did the other day was insane. And it was just like, to keep me, you know, I coming home, I really enjoy being a dad. I like doing the dishes and I like coming home being like ridiculously normal. So now I'm overcompensating to just kind of balance it out. So that's why I was telling you earlier that I went to the grocery store today and I saw on the rack, I saw Reader's Digest. I used to love that, man. I just got that.
So you're reading Reader's Digest. You're watching shows from the 19 early 60s.
I'm going home tonight. I'm going to make some pumpkin bread. Just going all nuts for the holidays.
What happened? This is so funny because you're pretty new. You're pretty new to being a dad.
I love it though.
And you and I remember talking to you beforehand. You had some trepidation. You know, you were like, I don't know, there's going to be a big change, right?
That's the funniest thing you're ever going to say, that I had some trepidation about. I was terrified. I always wanted to, and I actually wanted to have like a big family and everything. But you know, the things that happened to me that made me end up getting into this business made that always seem like it was a year away until I just decided like, hey, this is my choice. I know I'm with the right person. And then just, you know, it's one of those, a lot of things in life, you think it's a mountain and you're just stepping up onto a curb or stepping off it or whatever. And you think that, you know, the whole world cares. Everybody's paying attention to your problems, all of that shit. So this is a question,
because this is where we can probably relate is growing up. We both grew up in the 70s, mm-hmm. parented in the 70s.
I was sort of an overlap 70s into the 80s.
Okay, 70s and the 80s. I'm older than you. I was mostly 70s.
Right.
And I'm one of six siblings.
Mm-hmm. Six. Me too. I'm one
okay.
of six.
So here's the thing. It's chaos. You know, I love my parents and they did a fine job. But it was chaos in a lot of respects.
Something gave him a 3-star review.
Yeah, I just did.
Hey, it was good food, you know.
Yeah, I just gave my.
You're hungry? It's
not
bad.
I just gave my parents an okay Yelp review.
They got one Michelin star.
Yeah, they get no Michelin star. The food wasn't great, but they did what they could do. But it was chaotic. There's sort of frontier justice sometimes, and it's all this stuff that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Because I see my wife. We have two kids, and my wife showers each of them with attention, ladles them with attention, and makes sure that all of their emotional needs are met. And I'm always enraged. I'm jealous because I'm, you know, she's like, well, how did you feel about that, Beckett and Nev? How does that make you feel? And I'm going to go talk to her because she seems a little upset. So I'm going to go spend a half an hour with her and talk to her. And I'm furious because that's not
like
how it happened.
She's on the job and just shot a suspect. You know, it's just like her phone died.
But you feel that way, right?
Oh, my God. I used to do a bit about this. I was in the grocery store one time, and there was this kid crying because he wanted something, and his mother didn't give it to him, and it made me feel good. And I wanted to be like, yeah, get used to that.
Yeah.
You know? And then one time when I saw a mother gave into it, like, I got mad, and as an adult, I wanted to trip this toddler.
You wanted to trip a toddler.
I didn't do it, but like that was the thought in my head. Like, I wish that kid would fall down and get hurt, and I didn't do it, so I get to enjoy watching him cry. You know what's funny? Well, a long time ago when I was in English class, there was in high school, there was this story that everybody hated, and I loved it, but like it was the football players, cheerleaders, they all hated it, so I knew the pecking order. I was just, you know, I was background. Like if it was a movie, like I was just the guy walking by, and background, you know, me just walking through the high school, and then like all the football players and stuff. So it was this story about there was this kid, he was up in a tree, and there was two older kids were playing catch, and he was sort of heckling them and just being a dick. And then he fell out of the tree and started crying. I forget how it ended, but I just remember thinking that was perfect because I wanted them to beat the shit out of the kid. But you couldn't because you get in trouble. But then like nature just did it for him.
Yeah.
So then you got to enjoy watching him cry and you couldn't get in trouble. So when the adult showed up, like, what happened? I fell out of the tree.
You know what that is? That's biblical justice.
Yeah.
That's God took care of that.
It still bugs me to this day that I didn't have the courage to raise my hand in that class and say as everyone was going, oh, stupid. I mean, didn't go anywhere. These football players, I would be like, I loved it. Little shit fell out of the tree, started crying, and they didn't get in trouble. I wish that happened in my life.
Now, okay, so now.
4 stars.
With your child, mm-hmm. you're obviously going to shower more attention. Do you ever feel at all jealous that you're child is going to get more attention than you got?
No, I'm not going to.
And Sona's my assistant's here laughing because she sees how obsessed I am with this topic. What is it, Sona?
No, I'm just, it's the thing about being jealous of your kid for just getting attention and love. That's only something someone from a family of six kids would think about.
I'm enraged at my children.
forgetting
the attention.
When
I see the joy on my child's face.
That you're giving them.
And
by
also,
the way.
They're growing up without any deep emotional wounds, and I resent that. So I've got to feel like I have to manufacture.
No, but
them.
I think that's something that like I've heard like a lot of rappers that you know grew up in you know crazy tough neighborhoods, and then all of a sudden they're in the Hollywood Hills. There's like that thing where it's like, okay, I'm so happy my kid doesn't have to deal with any of this stuff. But is my kid just going to be this little like I don't know what the proper word is what you're supposed to say now? We used to say a pussy. Like, is this kid just going to be some spineless, like, You have like to just, at some point, there's got to be he's got to scrape his knee or something because he's going to go out. Now this is the thing: there's all of this crap out there about, you know, don't bully and don't do this and don't do that and all of this type of stuff, and everything's been labeled and they got all these kids doing this stuff. But when they go out in the real world and they get on the treadmill and it's all about, you know, making money and it's cutthroat, all of those rules are out the window.
Yes.
Like adults bully the shit out of each other. They're mean. They still say stuff. It's just at another level. So if you're going to just have them kind of be like the boy in the bubble and then just let them out there and be like, okay, I did my job. He's not this, he's not that, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that or anything like that, but he never got into a fight. Like that's, like we already have like a thing, like me and my wife, like she wants, you know, my daughter obviously to go to like ballet classes and stuff. I'm like, no, she's also going to learn some MMA because, no, because I feel like anytime an attacker would come in, like I feel like on the down low, like and nobody should know, especially sex offenders, that women should all learn that stuff because those guys, you know, if they're going to sexually violate a woman, they got to get in close. And like all those women that I watch in the UFC when they know jujitsu, whenever I see that, it was just like, I would love one of those pieces of shit to ever pick on somebody like this because they're just right in there and they just automatically get them in a triangle, choke them out. The cops will be there. They'll break their arm. Like whatever they got to do, they'll beat the shit out of them. And I was somebody initially when I saw the UFC women were getting into it, I was like, oh, I'm not, I don't want to watch them beating the crap out of each other and stuff. And now that I watched it, I'm like, this is great. Because I always felt like, you know, with all this Me Too shit that's out there now, like something that I've kind of started to understand is like, do you know that feeling you get when you watch like those behind the scenes in like prisons?
Yeah.
You know, and you watch that and all you think is, how the hell would I survive in there? Jesus Christ, I can imagine these guys walking around trying to do that stuff to you. And it's just like, you know, women have to deal with that having not committed a crime, just kind of walking down the street or something. Not saying all the time, like going to the grocery store, but like late at night, like they have to go mentally where I am when I'm watching like one of these things. So like, why would I want, you know, my kid to feel something like that? And if there is something out there that can prevent it, you know, I wish my wife would listen it like you do right now to this theory that I have as long, cause she just goes, no, no, no. She's going to learn how to dance. She's going to be a lady. It's like, yeah, and she'll know how to choke somebody out. It just, you need to have those surprise left turns to attract a mate.
Yeah.
You can't just be going down Main Street the whole time.
I like this ended with you wishing that you were married to me. That's the best place that this went. I wish the best for you. We're going to take a quick break. We're going
to
resolve
some. But you would divorce me because I would actually listen to your emotional needs and you wouldn't be able to handle it.
I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be listened to.
Yes.
I
you think
complain.
You want it.
I want to complain about it. I don't want to fix anything. I want to complain about all of it. And that's what I enjoy.
I finally pushed through that in the last 10 days.
You did? 10
yeah.
days?
The last 10 days.
I got you just in time.
I had a breakthrough.
Yeah,
I'll talk about when we get back. I had a breakthrough. Right. Now, I'm not saying I won't have some relapses of getting angry and inanimate objects and stupid shit that's out of my control. But I had a breakthrough.
This is incredible. I want to find out about this. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll find out about Bill Burr's life-changing breakthrough that happened only 10 days ago. Hang on.
And now it's time for the segment Conan O'Brien pays off the mortgage on his beach house.
Yes, yes. We don't need to go into detail. A big mortgage, beach house, bills to pay. Let's pay those bills.
Bolster Sleep Company. That's a company that makes an amazing mattress. Because if you're getting sleep, like for example, I had a really good night's sleep last night. And today I just feel 30 years younger, which would make me 8 years old. I just feel amazing.
Did you say 8 years old?
Don't do the math. Okay. Just let it go. Young audience out there, they love their 38-year-old Conan. And this is a really good mattress, you know? And here's the thing. I was told, and we've been over this, but I was told I'm getting the bolster mattress.
Yes.
And let's walk through this, Sona.
Okay.
And I was looking forward to getting the bolster mattress, and it never showed up.
Right.
Why didn't it show up?
Well, they emailed me and asked me for your address, and I gave them my address because I wanted a free mattress.
So you and your husband, Tack,
yes,
have the bolster mattress.
We have the mattress.
That mattress is not meant for you. It's meant for me.
You're right. But... you know, they emailed me, and so I took advantage of
you because you're my assistant.
Right, right.
That's ridiculous.
You're right. I'm not going to argue with the things that you're saying. I essentially stole a mattress from you.
Okay.
And I'm really glad I did because it's a fantastic mattress.
And you and your husband are happy.
Right. We're really happy. I mean, I know you complain about not getting sleep sometimes, but I don't have that problem.
I think you have a better mattress now than I do.
I'm pretty sure
My wife chose our mattress and it's okay, but you have the bolster mattress.
Yeah, you should definitely get a bolster mattress.
I have a bolster mattress. You took it. That's my mattress. I think if they sent me another one, you would have that delivered to your home, put it on the other bolster mattress, so you could have two mattresses.
That would be great if I could do that.
For God's sake.
I feel like you could probably just go get one.
You tell me. I don't know. Because this mattress, I'm told, combines real springs with a mid-layer of cooling foam. Is that true, Sona?
That's what you're told.
I'm told. Well, that's what I hear on the streets.
Yes.
I walk around and I talk to people about mattresses. And whenever you bring up bolster, guys around town say real springs, mid-layer of cooling foam. True?
Yeah, that's very true. It's a much cooler sleeping experience.
They use Tencel fabric, wicks away heat and moisture.
Is that something else you've heard on the streets talking about mattresses?
There's a rumor going around. There's some talk. There's some chatter. You know, it goes beyond the mattress to provide you with a quality night's sleep. I mean, you seem better rested.
I am.
You stole from me.
Well, I would say I'm sorry, but I'm really happy I did that because I like this mattress a lot.
But Bolster does, they do something very cool. They're busy changing people's lives. Check this out. With every purchase you make, they give scholarships to a technical school in Haiti that trains people in skills like HVAC, plumbing, diesel mechanics. I've mentioned this before. I've been to Haiti. I love the Haitian people. And I really do support any company that's helping out Haiti and the cause. So good for you, Bolster. What I'm told by my assistant, the thief, make the switch to a restful night's sleep today at bolstersleep.com. Use the promo code Conan for $100 off a mattress or adjustable bed. That's bolstersleep.com. The promo code is Conan for $100 off. The promo code should be Sona Thief, but it's Conan.
We can use that promo code to get you one at a discounted price.
I'm not going to, don't make me say again that I have a mattress. It just isn't in my home. It's in your home.
Well, then you don't have it. I have it.
I hate it here. And that leads me to this thought that just popped into my head. Everybody, every business wants to know what their customers are thinking, what they care about. And if you got a business, you want to meet my friends at Campaign Monitor. Let me explain as best as I can. Campaign Monitor is an email marketing platform. It makes it easy to send emails your customers actually care about. As you know, I'm not tech savvy.
Right.
What's an email?
Okay. So we're starting at the basics, yes, is what you're saying. Okay. So email is electronic mail you get on your computer.
Okay.
I don't have a company, so I don't know this.
Nor will you. I don't think you're going to have a company.
What does that mean? Why wouldn't I have a company? I could have a company.
I don't know. You're way too laid back.
I am laid back. You're right.
Yeah, you're not starting a company.
But if I did have a company, I would use Campaign Monitor.
Yeah, well, Campaign Monitor, I'm again, this is what I'm told. It's got helpful tools. They have a drag and drop email builder, and they have a library of ready-to-go templates. So you can create a personal relational email and automations, and you can build relationships with your customers, leading to more engagement and revenue for your brand. I have a lot of questions. And if you have questions, they have a friendly support system of people who are available 7 days a week. So I might just call them and say, I just did an ad for you guys, and I'd like you to explain to me what this is. They let you use their stuff for free, which is cool. And you can sign up for and try out their platform for free. No cards, no contract. So maybe the best way to find out what this is to just sign up and start using it.
Well, you know, if when I open my company and I start my company and I want to send out emails to my customers to market the products that I will eventually have, this is the kind of platform I will use in order to do that. So
what kind of company would you have? You'd have, it'd be something real chill, like Beanbag Chairs.
I think that would be a cool company. I'd have a really cool company. I'd be really good at
it. I think you're a cool person. You know that, right?
I could start a company.
It takes, work to start a company.
It also takes a great email marketing platform. And so I would use Campaign Monitor in my future very successful company, whatever that is.
Go ahead. You know, the best thing to do is check it out for yourself. Go to campaignmonitor.com/Conan. Okay. Campaignmonitor.com/Conan. Campaign Monitor, make your emails unforgettable. That's a slogan I just thought of.
And we're back.
I know. And I'm literally going to be telling you this emotional breakthrough, like a fat person that lost 5 pounds. Like, I'm not going to go back to Twinkies.
3 days into a diet. I cracked it.
I got it. I got to figure it out, dude. I'm going to have the washboard middle. Another 600 pounds. It's going to come off. No, I don't know what happened. I'm just sick of getting into arguments with people, and I'm sick of getting into arguments with, like, my wife. And I went to this Dodger game, and then when I went home, my wife was mad at me because she didn't feel that she was invited to the pregame because my friends came over and I had her get some beer for us. You know, one of the few times I actually sent her out to go do shit. She does that to me all the time. Can you swing by? That's her big word. It's always in the complete opposite direction. I always want to send her a definition of swinging by. Usually means on the way. Not can you burn another half a tank of gas past the house? So anyways, I came home and she's like, all the lights were out in the house. So I go, let's go down, you know, sit outside on the back porch, quietly smoke cigars and talk about how the Red Sox are one game away. Can you believe this, right? So she texts me at like 11:30. She's like, where are you? I go, I'm on the back porch. And she just lights into me about the whole day, how she hasn't been invited or whatever, everything like that. So normally, I would have just gotten into it. It's like, how are you not invited to something that was going on in your own house?
Why do you need an invitation?
Yeah, why do you need an invitation? Home. And not only that, you have women over here all the fucking time, and I feel you subconsciously being like, Bill, get the fuck out of here. And I get it. I screw. I get out of there. I know you guys want to talk about all of what you want to talk about, whatever. But I like when my wife hangs around because she's hilarious. She breaks balls. And then my guy friend's always like, oh, my God, you got the coolest wife ever. I'm like proud of her. But I don't know what happened. I kind of got off the road. I didn't ask about her day. You know, it's that one little thing and then it just all starts tumbling. So I went upstairs and I just kept saying, I'm not going to get into an argument with you. I love you and you love me. I'm not leaving you. You're not leaving me. This is stupid. Like, what is the problem? And she kept, no, forget it. Forget it. I had to like just slowly pull it out of her. And I found out that that's what it was. I didn't ask her about her day. And I said, you're right. I should have done that. All right. I apologize. Now, can you come over here or are you going to go to bed angry? She was a little stubborn. And I just kept saying, I'm done with this. I'm saying it out loud. So hopefully I do it. I'm saying, I'm not doing it anymore. And if she gives me the honey-do list, rather than bitching about it, I'm just going to knock it out. And I'm going to test this theory, the happy wife, happy life thing, you know, which I've been joking about in my life that it sounds cute because it rhymes, but it really is a threat. And it's kind of weird that all this progressive feminism out there, that they're sitting there talking about being kept women when most guys are in my situation. They don't beat their wives. They're not assholes. But basically, they're in a situation that unless they do everything that another adult says, there's no happiness in the house. And somehow, like, that's progressive.
Okay, you achieved no breakthrough. That's what I'm getting. That's what I'm getting right now. You have not achieved a breakthrough. You said you had achieved a breakthrough. Then you started talking, and now you are raging against the institution.
I told you I was going to have a relapse. I know, though, but I realize that what I did in the, like, that's the key, right? And we are getting along ridiculously well.
Yeah.
But there just is that resentment, because there's always that voice in my head, like, Bill, you know you're getting along so well with her because you're just doing everything that she says. Like, how is this fair? But I have enough. I've carved out enough space. You know, I got my little space in the back where I can smoke cigars, and then I soundproof the garage, and I have a drum kit in there. And that's another thing I do. We start getting into a fight. I go, I'm going for a walk, and I go into the garage, and I play like 2 Pantera songs. And then I don't care. And then I'm having a good time. And I come back out. And I don't even remember, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to move it? I'll move it over there. And then next day, tell me to move it back. And I don't give a shit.
That's a good
I don't want you to say you don't give a shit. You know, that's another thing, too. I want you to mean it when you do it. This can't just be a system. You know what I mean? You have to be emotionally connected to what they want. I'm almost there, Conan. You're not close. It's a screen door. It's a screen door.
You're not close.
That's you. That's your own issues.
Oh, you know what I hate is when people say don't say project. I hate the way people say project.
You told the whole story how you projected your childhood on your own children.
That's true.
Your seed.
But here's the thing. What I don't like about the projecting thing is that there are times where I'll see some. It's like we live in this culture now where someone can take a gun and can shoot someone else. And then you can run up to that person and say, you just shot
We've always lived in a country like that,
Hold
by
on.
The way.
Hold on. Let me finish.
I don't know if you've read a history book. That's kind of how it went down.
And then someone runs over. Then someone runs over to the guy who just shot someone and says, hey, I can't believe you just shot that guy. I didn't do that. You're just projecting that onto me. That's the culture we have now. Everything's projected onto
you.
You
don't think that that's a bit of an extreme example?
I think it is.
Listen, you've never been in like a bad mood and just taken it out on somebody?
Sana, or like Sana, what do you think?
Yes, he has.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He has often.
Yeah.
Okay. But I do it
all the time.
It's pretty amusing, isn't it?
It's amusing because it's passive aggressive in a very frightening way.
I have a lazy. It's funny. People are laughing. When I'm mad at them, I get them laughing, and then they're like, they're tearing up because they're really laughing at this passive aggressive thing I'm doing about how they just fucked up. And then I walk away, and they realize they've been cut 6 different times across the abdomen.
But,
and
awful.
It's awful, right?
I can't wait
for the behind the scenes.
This is the behind the scenes.
Oh, this is. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I'm an awful person.
He's awful. Wait a minute. Sorry.
Come on.
Only he's allowed to say how awful he is.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to go, no, Conan, you're not that bad.
Oh, no. That's not our relationship at all.
He is the worst. No.
He's
the worst.
So this is interesting. So you've got, you know, there's this theory that
I've been doing for 3 days, and it's the happiest 3 days of my marriage so far.
Okay.
Let me tell you this. Doing everything she says for me to do.
There's this theory that we are easier to deal with, men, as we get older because our testosterone falls.
They can never give us credit for just having wisdom. You know what I mean? It can never be like a guy is actually smart. Despite all the shit we've invented, it just has to be, this is just a chemical thing. You've been given a sedative. Speaking of testosterone, it's borderline illegal now to have testosterone. Like this whole champion of the beta male is just like, I just don't understand, which is fine. You can be like that. You know, I got a friend of mine. He loves Sex in the City, which I think when you watch it, it's so campy. It should be a musical. Every time I drive my wife nuts, like she won't watch that show in front of me because the oversexed one there. Like every joke is the same joke. So I'm in the other room. Every time she delivers a punchline, I just go, cause she's a whore.
Which one is that? Samantha?
It's Samantha.
Yeah.
I always feel so bad for Kim Cattrall. It's just like, you couldn't give her anything else. She told the same fucking joke for like 7 years. She never poked her head into the writer's room being like, hey, what if she's, has a hobby?
She did have a hobby.
She's into sailing when she was a kid, or she got back into horseback riding or something. Oh, she's into giant horse cocks? No, she just likes to ride horses. Oh, that show. Oh,
here's my question really for you. What's do you ever fear
yes.
that as your rage drops and you become more centered, this is a total comedian's fear, that you'll lose the edge?
No. Not even remotely. That's like the worst thing ever, that whole thing. If you get happy, that you're not going to be funny. And that's like, you know, so I had a kid, this ridiculous level of love that you then experience. But then what immediately happens is there's this fear of, oh, my God, what if something happens to this wonderful thing? So then your comedy comes out of the fear. Like one of the first jokes I had was the first time I walked out onto the front porch with my daughter, my first thought was, what if a bird of prey swoops in and takes my baby? And I went through the whole thing of how I would kill this bird. I think I ripped its leg off and stabbed it with its own talons. Do you remember that in Saving Private Ryan when that guy was trying to hold off the knight?
And they slowly push it through.
That's what I did to the bird.
In your mind?
In my mind,
Let's just be clear that you did that in your mind.
Yeah, but so since that... So it just comes from that.
Yep.
And
I agree with you, by the way. Yeah. I don't think, first of all, if someone said it's a choice, you can either be funny or be happy, I'd say happy, give me happy. I'll take that. If it was a choice, I don't think it is a choice because I think
That's a tough one. I'm not there mentally that, because my whole way of connecting with people is I make them laugh. And like, that just comes from, you know, growing up with orange hair. And it was just like, I got to make these people laugh before they beat the shit out of me.
Well, that's, you're talking, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, that's essentially what it was.
I hated the way I looked when I grew up. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted jet black hair. I wanted to look like Bob Crane on Hogan's Heroes. Jack Lord was my hair. I thought that a real man, was supposed to have jet black hair. And I had, you know, sort of orangish hair. My two front teeth were dead. And I had freckles and a round face. And
that's,
I just.
That's a tough hand, dude. You got to fold on that one.
It was, no. I trust me. I tried to fold. And
you got to play the hand.
It was bad. I played the hand, but that's where you learn. I got to be funny.
I hated the punk rock kids. I hated when they came in and they dyed their hair some crazy color and everybody thought they were so radical. And I just remember that you can wash that out and rejoin the Matrix whenever you want. Like, this is like a fucking life sentence.
Yeah.
No, I used to think that. I used to think if I had brown or black hair, I would have a girlfriend right now. I would literally, literally think shit like that. Like, I swear to God, if I had brown or black hair, I don't think I'd be in this business. I'd probably just be some, you know, jackass driving a truck or something.
Yeah. Did you, was there anyone you wanted to look like that you envied their look and you thought, yeah, I wish I looked like?
Oh, yeah, all of them. Burt Reynolds, like the whole thing, the whole look growing up, Burt Reynolds was the model. Like, it was like you had to be able to get a tan, you had to have jet black hair, you had to have the mustache. And it was Burt Reynolds, then it went to Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, yeah.
And then there was Matt Houston. Yep. All of these guys were just like subsets. They were all the same guy, and they had the curly, wavy hair. The shirt open, right, with the medallion sort of thing, and they just were guys. But I love those guys, and I thought, like, you know, Burt Reynolds passing was really an end of an era for a guy that they really aren't going to allow you to be anymore. Like, they're not going to allow a guy to kind of have that kind of fun anymore. And what's so stupid is they act like there wasn't willing participants. You know what I mean? Like, they just can't be this charismatic guy that all the women want to bang, and then he just can't go out and bang them all and have a good time. Like, I think so much of what's going on right now is women who are like fours and fives are mad that they're not being treated like tens, you know?
Okay.
Which annoys me as a five.
This is Bill Burr talking now.
Yeah, but this—
That's his voice.
This annoys
Conan's
me.
Conan's over here listening to him.
This annoys me as a five. I'm like, get a personality. Start telling some fucking jokes. Like, I don't get mad that I'm not like the Coppertone model. You know, there needs to be more diversity. It's like, no, you pasty fuck. We're trying to sell some stuff here. Beautiful people exist for a reason. Like, they can sell stuff. They're fun to look at. You know, I love a beautiful movie star. I don't think that regular people should be up there. If I want to do that, I'll go in a bus station. I am happy to be 90th on the call sheet, going in, handing something to a beautiful actor in all the movies that I'm in. You steer into it. That's what you do. If you're not good looking, you just steer into it. You don't try to make good looking people feel bad for being good looking. I mean, there's a whole bunch of life that they don't even understand until their looks start. Like, they get their pain when their looks go away, okay, and they haven't built any solid relationships with anybody, and then their big AMX card of looks gets canceled. It's like, what's his face in Trading Places? You're like, Dan Aykroyd.
You just go, it all goes
away. And the next thing you're eating a fucking sandwich and your Santa Claus beard is getting in it. Okay. They're going to get their pain.
Here's the question, though. Do you think that there are handsome people out there that are really funny?
Burt Reynolds was hilarious.
Exactly. And let me just add a quick story. Burt Reynolds, really not long before he died, I think months before he died, came on our show. And I went back to say hi to him in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting down. He had trouble getting up. And,
yeah, he used to play football and did all those stunts.
Yeah, right? He needed help. And so he didn't get up, and I had been told he had trouble with that. So I just sat in a chair that was right up next to him to just thank him for coming and chat with him and try mm-hmm. and put him at ease. And as I was talking to him, he reached over, and he started to massage my back. And he was massaging my back, and it was one of the best massages I've had. And I was like, yeah, I just leaned into it. I did. I just was like, Burt Reynolds is my hero from when I was a kid, is massaging my back. And I was going like, oh, that feels good. And he's like, oh, yeah. You got a knot right here. I'm going to get that for you. And I thought, I am now so many women in 1972 getting a massage from Burt Reynolds. And I love it. I loved it.
Yeah, I like how homoerotic it is too, because guys back then were like so straight, they almost became gay again. Like, you know what's the funniest thing ever? Men of a certain age, if you go into a steam room, like everybody our age down, you got a towel over yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those guys are like so straight. They just come walking in with their junk hanging out like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, Jesus Christ, buddy.
They don't, it doesn't occur to them
it doesn't,
that it's a problem.
Yes. It was not even like, I didn't even think that they, like, homosexuality was so not even out presented anywhere in mainstream, I think. That's my only way to, like, get around, like, how their behavior. It's a running joke between me and my friends that I go on the road with. Like, when we see an old guy coming, like, starting to change, we just start laughing because we just sit there, okay, here we go. Here comes this guy with his Depression-era junk that's going to come walking.
Hey, that penis fought Hitler. Give him a break.
Greatest Generation dick and balls is about ready to come in here.
We took the beach with this cock. Give me a break.
That's how I didn't get shot. I hid behind my junk. Yeah, but those guys back then, like just the lives that they were that they were living. So, I mean, back then you looked up to them. Now I don't know. I don't know where it went.
This is what happens. The testosterone drops. The
fluoride's in the water.
Probably.
Right? The lizard people all meeting. I would love to hear what they really talk about, you know, at those meetings. You know, there's no way they're not talking about the population problem in water.
What people? What are you talking
about? At the Bilderberg. The Bilderberg group. You know, the most powerful people, military and all that.
They get together and they talk about
population? It's not a secret where they meet and who's there. They just won't say what they talk about, which I understand to a certain extent. But you can't tell me that somebody's not in the middle of the meeting like, hey, 7 billion people. I'm just saying.
Wait, that's the result of your study?
Just throwing that out there.
I'm just, hey, 7 million, just saying.
Swirl of trash, 2.5 times the size of Texas, 2 miles deep out in the Pacific Ocean. I think the robots, that's what it's going to be.
Are you a conspiracy theorist?
Yeah, but I'm
not. Because I am not.
But I am not.
I think people, when they get into these small elite rooms, talk about stuff that is very mundane and boring, and they don't know much more than we do. I really believe that.
I think that makes you feel better. I think you're projecting. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I can't handle it anymore.
I know. I love that I know something now that gets under your skin. No, I am. I definitely am.
All right.
But I don't think the world is made out of cheese, but I also don't look at...
No one does.
The moon. But I'm just saying, they go, oh, well, put on your fucking tinfoil hat, you know? I just, you know.
You went political at the end, and that disappointed me. You're a hilarious gentleman, a hilarious
Thank
individual.
You.
What I love about this format, I've not been doing this long, and I know you do this, only you don't need a guest. You just talk yourself, which I think is the height of narcissism. You have the nerve. Here I am, and I'm not going to talk to anybody.
No,
here
you know what it is? You know what it really stems from? It's what? Laziness. I don't want to deal with telling somebody where I live and, oh, dude, my fucking wife told me to go blah, 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 blah. And then I got to, you know, can we reschedule this for next Tuesday? I just didn't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
And
So, but I
have guests on. I'd love to have you on.
Oh, come on. We'll do the same. We'll do the flip side of this.
Yes.
Well, watch for me. Watch for me. What the fuck was that?
This is literally what it's become. We've just talked to each other for an hour, and now you're going to come on mine, and we're going to talk for another hour.
That's all it is. That's what I think is going to be the end of all wars, is that everyone's going to have a podcast, and people are going to be so busy going on each other's podcasts, there'll be no crime, there'll be no violence. Yeah. Also, no one growing crops. But we'll just all quietly, as a civilization, go to sleep, and the planet will die.
Now, all that has to be you take the humor out of that, and you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's a very little, just move
just
the needle.
A slight move.
Yeah. All Stop being silly. Me. Be more serious.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. You cured me. Hey, and I'm glad you reached, and Bill, it's clear to me that you really have reached nirvana and an inner peace.
Is this passive aggressive?
There's nothing but bile all over the table. But it's Boston bile, which is the best kind.
I am like the happiest I've ever been.
I know. It scares. That's the saddest thing you've ever said. All right. We're going to go.
I'll come on here whenever you want me to come on. I love coming over. I got nothing but great memories of coming over here.
All right.
I've gotten a lot by doing your show. I've been using you, Conan. I really have. I was like, where is there another redheaded male that I can hitch my wagon to? And I did it, God damn it.
All right. Thank you. God bless.
I'll return my calls.
God bless.
All right. Thank you, Conan.
Go Sox. Over and out. It's funny we're talking about finances because I just had a thought.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I did. I was thinking about Robinhood, the investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, cryptos, all commission free. Have you bought cryptocurrency?
I haven't, and it is the first time I've heard you say that. So it's very strange that you just randomly said that right
now. Yeah. I'm just intrigued by this app. Mm. So even if you're like a stock market newcomer, you can invest for the first time with real confidence. Huh. You know, the same confidence that I had going into the beach house.
I think it's a terrible comparison to
Anyway, this is a cool app. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood doesn't charge commission. No commission fees. Isn't that cool?
That's cool. I mean, my brother is a financial advisor. So
yeah, I know.
This seems,
I know Danny.
Danny is a financial advisor. So this seems like it would ruin my brother's career.
Yeah, probably. But he's got to go. Got to change with the times.
What? No.
This has a real clear design, easy to understand charts and market data, and it lets you place a trade on your smartphone in just 4 taps.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, anything that lets me make a decision financially more quickly, that's a recipe for success. So, I don't know, I just think this is the kind of thing I'd like to get a little more involved in my finances, and Robinhood's going to let me do it.
You want to get more involved?
Yes.
I think that's a terrible idea.
Well, there's a reason I bought those Arabian ponies. I thought there was big money in them. I didn't know they had leukemia. Plus, I think it's kind of cool that you can discover new stocks and track favorite companies with a personalized news feed. You set it up and you get the news feed.
Mm-hmm.
You're hip to what's going on. That's something kids say, right?
You're in the know.
I like my version, hip. You know, let's say you're on the web. You can view stock collections like 100 most popular. There's also sectors like entertainment and social media. I should be checking that stuff out because I don't know much about entertainment, and I'm supposedly in entertainment.
You've been in it for over 25 years.
Kind of, yeah, in my version of it. I really do think that it's easy to use. 4 quick taps and you're investing. Check it out. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. All you got to do is sign up at conan.robinhood.com. That's conan.robinhood.com. This is exciting. All this fall, I'm doing something I've always wanted to do, which is hit the road with a bunch of my favorite stand-up comics. I love live audiences. I love going city to city. It's an 18-city tour, and we're having a blast. Are we not, Sona?
Yes. Every comedian is hysterical. I can watch this show a million times.
Yeah, it's really fun. And I'm mentioning this for a reason. We got some dates coming up. And if you'd like to come see us, it's really fun. It's called Team Coco Presents Conan and Friends, A Night of Stand-Up Comedy and Investment Tips. A little hint, there's no investment tips. We are headed to Los Angeles, Vancouver, Denver, and San Francisco. So LA, Vancouver, Denver, San Francisco. If you live there, you want to come see the show and laugh really hard for 2 hours, head to teamcoco.com/tour to grab your tickets today. That's teamcoco.com/tour. And I'll see you soon.
And now it's time for a segment called Conan O'Brien Pays Off the Mortgage on His Beach House.
Bill, this is Matt. In the beginning, you said that you felt great.
Why are you talking to me like we're on the phone? Bill, this is Matt. Just come in, Bill.
People know who you are. They don't know who I am.
You should have said, hello, everyone. I'm Matt.
Hello.
I'm here with Bill.
Jesus Christ, Bill.
There we go.
In the beginning, you said that you felt great about being Conan's friend, but you
now I think he's completely out of his mind. After spending an hour with him.
You don't want to be his friend?
Yeah. Once the HD makeup's gone and you really look into his soul, which you can see because he's a redhead like me, we're transparent.
You also said you wanted to be his best friend.
His best friend? I said that?
You did.
That's
say
creepy.
That. Yeah. Do you still feel that way?
No, I think I just always wanted an older, redheaded older brother.
Okay.
Who didn't beat the shit out of me. Because he related. My older brother had brown hair, so he didn't have. There was no empathy.
Is that where your desire to have the brown hair look came from?
No, it was the ass kickings.
Oh,
the inordinate amount of ass kickings that I was getting just because I was there,
right?
As opposed to the fact that I actually did something deserving of it.
But you
I really sound like a feminist right now. I just feel like if I had brown hair, all the doors would fly open, and no one would be mean to me. I love trashing feminists. You know why? You don't have to use bait. They just jump in the boat. They're the easiest people to upset.
If I could do an entire tour of
women's colleges, it would be my favorite year of stand-up ever.
Why don't you?
I don't know. You know what? Maybe I'll pitch that. Every night, I'll just put the video up.
Do you want to be Conan's friend?
Do you want to be Conan's friend? You're really harping on this. This is weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
All right. I don't feel good. I felt great about the ending of the real podcast. This aftermath, I don't feel good about. Well, I feel like you just got some sort of information out of me. And I'm going to walk through a false panel here, and I'll never see my kid again. All right?
What is that button?
Is that some sort of Freemason thing next to your pocket?
Oh, God. It's just a button.
All right.
You okay?
I am fine, but, you know, I was in a much better mood a minute ago. So I want you to know, I don't mean this in a bad way, but I want you to go fuck yourself.
I understand.
And I want you to stop doing this to guests, because this isn't right.
Okay.
This is going to, you know, what did he hire you to do? Creep people out before they went into traffic? I don't understand you as a person. Maybe it's because you have brown hair and you can't relate.
But didn't you just say that you shouldn't?
Stop trying to assimilate into my world.
Jesus Christ.
And appropriating my pigmentless culture.
Didn't you say to leave those people alone?
Who?
The people with the brown hair that did not begrudge them.
You're not a good-looking guy.
I was talking about
good-looking people.
I didn't say I was.
You look like that guy in the coming-of-age movie that they do the makeover on. You know what I mean? Back in the 80s?
No, I don't.
Uh-uh. You do.
No, I know. I don't know what you mean. I'm not.
Oh, you don't. All
arguing.
Right. Well, I'm old.
Okay.
You remember the Andrews sisters?
Yeah.
You look like
don't
their manager.
Don't sit under the apple tree.
You look like their manager.
Wow.
That was the biggest insult from the 1940s. You want to go back another decade? Because I'll do it.
I guess.
All right, I'm kidding. Anyways, thank you for having me on, Matt.
I'll see you at home.
Yeah.
Now it's time to listen to some voicemails from some fans and answer some questions.
I await with anxiety.
Okay. This next question is about your staff.
Conan, what is your favorite part of messing with your staff? Hope to hear back. Thanks. Bye.
Wow, that's a good question. My favorite part of messing with my staff. To be completely honest, it's every kid's fantasy to sort of be all powerful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, kids put on like they tie a cape around their neck and they think they're Superman and they jump off a balcony. I have this little world, a little Willy Wonka factory, and I'm Willy Wonka. And if you're going to be at the Willy Wonka factory, be Willy Wonka. It's great. And I walk around and I say all these crazy things and no one can. I'm very silly. I speak in like a fake language that I've made up. I call everybody Chopper.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to call them by the name. Hey there, Chopper. What's up there, Chopper? Looking good there, Chopper. I kick open doors instead of opening them regularly. There's a couple of the writers that I wrestle. It's madness.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing to do with you is when you're holding a cookie that you just got downstairs in the green room.
I hate this.
And you're so happy with it. As I'm walking by, I crumble the cookie.
Yeah.
In one move. And you always say, you dick.
You dick. I say, you dick.
Yeah.
I call you a dick.
Yeah, in front of everyone. And everyone laughs. We all enjoy it. In fairness, I do then come back and help you pick up the pieces of crumbled cookie.
No, you don't.
You're right. I've never done that.
No, you've never done that. You did that this week. I was holding a package of Oreos I was really excited about.
You know what it is? I see how excited you are. I'm not kidding. You get so excited about a pack of Oreos. Like it's the pot of gold at the end of a rainbow and only you just found it. And then I reach over and I crush it. Now,
yeah.
To be fair, you could still pour that over the top of an ice cream cone.
Yeah, but I want my full Oreos. You took that experience away from me.
I don't do this all the time, but it's just fun to be a madman who's in charge of an insane little kingdom.
Yes.
I enjoy it. And absolute power does corrupt, absolutely. And I'm saying that is a good thing.
Yeah, okay. This next question is about sports.
Conan, just wanted to know, what celebrity really gets you heated when it comes to sports? Like, I know you're a big Boston fan, so who do you get pissed off at? All right, have a good one, man.
He seemed to get dispirited at the end of his message.
Yeah.
He said his thing, and then he was like, well, all right, man. I felt like his spirit leave his body.
Oh.
That's a good one. I have to say, there's no specific celebrity, like a team gets hot,
and then they're in the playoffs, and suddenly these celebrities that you never associated with that team start showing up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't have a specific name, but I've just noticed I'll be watching TV, and the Brewers, you know, will be in the Brewers for the first time are in the World Series. This is really exciting. And let's say, there's Carmen Electra in the front row. What? Where has she been? She loves her Brewers. Where's she from? She's from Las Vegas, Nevada. And she loves her Brewers. And she's got a new show called Electra Doing It to the Jam Jam, you know?
That's a terrible title.
You should tell her that. It's her title, you know? Do you know what I mean? You're watching it and, well, the Brewers, it's so exciting. Everyone's excited here in Milwaukee. And there's Dame Judi Dench. She's in the front row and she's trying to lead the wave. Dame Judi Dench says she's loved the Brewers since she was a little girl growing up at Hogwarts.
What?
Just nonsense. I don't like celebrities, and I hate it on Fox when they're trying to promote a show. Have you noticed this? They're trying to promote a show and Fox will have the World Series and the camera just happens to find the entire cast of the new show and the show hasn't even come on the air yet. And they'll be like, well, we're back with some big baseball. What do we have here? It's Willem Dafoe and Christie Brinkley and seven kids who play their children from the cast of Fox's All New. Get up there, Jub Jub. People don't travel around together that are on a sitcom. That's never happened. What's next?
Oh, let's do number six.
Okay, this bothers me because you seem really excited about question number six.
Conan, can you please let me know if you bought Sona a new car? Because you destroyed hers, and it's only fair. Thanks, bye.
I love this question.
For those of you who don't know, on the air, I noticed that Sona's car is a little dilapidated. It's a Jetta.
Mm-hmm.
And how old is it?
11 years old.
11 years old. And I think it has over 900,000 miles on it.
It has 160,000 miles on it.
It's been to Mars and back four times. And looks like it, actually. Looked like it burned up during reentry on one of those trips. It's in rough shape, that car. And so we went looking for a new car for you. And I thought, you know, it's supposed to be funny. It's a funny segment. It's not funny if I buy you a nice car.
I would have enjoyed it.
You would have enjoyed it, but you wouldn't have laughed, and people watching it wouldn't have laughed. So I found you the least expensive car I could find. I think we paid, and I'm not kidding, $50 for this car. And I gave it to you, so I did give you a car. Now, granted, it looks like a family of nine was murdered in the back seat. There's just torn up upholstery, and you wouldn't even get in it.
No, I hate it.
Describe the car.
Disgusting. It was smelly. It was completely just stained inside.
Weird stains, too.
So many weird stains that don't look normal.
No.
It was, I think most of the time they brought it, they had to push it. It was just...
It didn't really work.
It didn't work
and
well.
And I had it pushed out onto television and presented to you. And it was funny. I think what this woman's alluding to is that earlier in this segment, we investigated your car. And I may have pulled a few things off the car.
You broke things.
I broke a few things. But then, did I not fix most of them?
No, actually, no.
I did.
No, you ripped the sunglass holder out and it broke.
Right.
And now it is broken. So that is not fixed.
So that's something, in fairness, I should probably pay for.
Yeah. Well, here's what a lot of people have asked me if you bought a new car. I think they think that on air you presented me with this crappy car. But then after, when we went to commercial, you opened it, you're like, here's a great new practical car for you that I got you because I ruined yours.
Wait, what am I, suddenly Ellen?
That's what I tell people. What am I, Oprah?
No, that would be stealing their idea of giving people nice things. I can't do that. I refuse to infringe on their territory. I've carved out my own thing, which is I don't give anybody anything. Sorry, it's just funny to me. Look under your seats, ladies and gentlemen, and there's nothing there. It's Conan's week of nothing. Well, 7 days till Christmas, you get nada. That amuses me. And I think I give the ultimate gift, laughter. Hello? Where'd you go? You still here? Why don't you just do this? Because this would be in keeping with your style. Why don't you order me a new car? And then have it delivered to your house. because you've done that with plenty of things, haven't you, Sona?
Should we do another question?
Sure.
Hey, Conan, this keeps me up at night. I just want to know who your favorite Pokemon is. Thank you.
Oh, definitely Shaikadu.
What?
Shaikadu.
Is Shaikadu a Pokemon?
Yeah. He looks like, sort of like a watermelon, but he's got four eyes.
I don't know anything about Pokemon.
Yeah, Shaikadu. I love Shaikadu. I like Bibliok.
Okay.
Stroz.
Wait, what was
Mixies,
that one?
Pratya. I love Haiku. Toshishipa.
Okay.
Gimgam. I like Gimgam. Gimgam is a clam that's covered in chocolate and it has sneakers.
It's...
Hakataka is my favorite. I like Hakataka. He's a little sailor's cap that has six legs and it wears a wristwatch. Hakataka. Dodolidu. I like Dodolidu. Dodolidu is probably the best. It's the body of a worm and then it's the head of a 1970s game show host. I don't need to know real characters because I can do this all day and all night. You know I can.
I do. And I actually was, I thought Rokopu. They were real.
Rokopu. I love Rokopu. Rokopu is a toothbrush that's from Russia and it wears a tweed suit. Rokopu.
The toothbrush?
Yeah. I'll do this as long as you want to do it.
Can we make it stop?
I am a bottomless well of fake Pokemon characters. Because you know what? And kids, if you're listening out there, if you can't make it in this life, fake it in this life. I know very little, but I know how to just talk. Hikiti. It's a toilet seat with a mustache. He drives a little Volkswagen Bug. Hikiti. I'll do this till the cows come home, which reminds me of Goglihu. Goglihu is a cow who's coming home, and he's dressed like an astronaut, and he's lactose intolerant, which is rough if you're a cow.
The cow is?
Why would you do this? Why would you revisit any of this? Why would you go back to the scene of the crime? It's best just to move on. You think that guy's going to be satisfied with my answer?
I think the guy
spent his life thinking about this. This crap, and here I am. You know, it's not right.
No.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend with Sona Movsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Special thanks to Jack White and the White Stripes for the theme song. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Coming Monday on Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Hi, I'm Alan Alda, and I'm a guest on Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. You got to listen to this. They made me laugh. I laughed like this.
You were not prepared for what a big star you would become after that.
Well, is that great story about how your face was more recognized to those students than Lincoln's?
Isn't that weird?
Bizarre.
And Lincoln, you know, they tried it, my face and Lincoln's face, and they showed it to school children. And during those years, they recognized me more easily than Lincoln. And that's hard to believe because he had his own penny.
Join Gilbert, Frank, and their guests Alan Alda this Monday, wherever you listen to podcasts.